Welcome to Facilitating the Mission, the podcast of Shepherd Staff Mission Facilitators. My name is Brian Mondock.
And my name is Jeff Jackson.
Hey, Jeff, have you been experiencing any of this polar vortex on the West Coast?
Oh, I have to say, we have not. We're cold today. It's like in the low 60s. When I watch the news and I see what's going on throughout the rest of the country, I'm just like, yeah, California ruins you pretty much. Southern California ruined you. Yeah.
So temperatures have plunged into the 60s.
Yeah. In fact, there was one of those Babylon Bee articles that I actually put on my Facebook page where it says, you know, Californians brace themselves for a cold front. It's going to be in the 50s.
Say it isn't so.
Yeah, man. It is brutal back there. And in fact, I talked to one of the folks that we serve. She's back on furlough from the country where she serves at. And she was in Indiana when I talked to her, and it was like 12 below. And I'm just like, oh man, I can't deal with that. I'm from California. I'm raised out here. So that is just crazy to me.
Well, that's how it is for me here. I mean, I've only lived here 3 years, and I was raised in California, and then for the past 25 years lived in Florida. So I'm suffering, baby, but I like it. I like the snow. It reminds me of Narnia.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's
a good analogy. I remember that. They did that pretty well in the movie too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
It's nice. I didn't have snow when I was a kid, so I'm always out there playing in it now. My dog loves it. We're always goofing in the snow, so whatever.
Yeah.
You get used to it. Just wear layers.
Yeah, and we're a couple of those old guys now that when we get together, you know, we have conversations. We always talk about the weather first.
I know. Helps us ease into the really hard stuff.
It is.
We have to talk about.
Yeah.
Jeff, I just sent out an e-blast today to all the church key persons that we serve at Shepherd Staff about missionary care topic of just a care call. And Jeff, I thought that the content of that email was dynamite and useful. And I think we should talk about it here in this podcast, and even we should look forward to a blog post on it too, or something, you know, in the near future, but just good stuff. Why don't you unpack that, you know, what you were thinking in that newsletter? Okay. Was like, I think there was like 9 points in there that you hit.
Well, you know, kind of what prompted that, you know, we write fairly regularly to the key people in the home churches of the missionaries we serve to just kind of, you know, provoke them to think about how they're sending well, you know, what sending well looks like for the missionaries that they've sent out. And I know that this is the time of year, actually, if they're serving above the equator, the missionaries are serving above the equator, where you're in the sort of the dead of winter right now. And it can be really discouraging as it's cloudy, it's cold, there's only 6-7 hours of sunlight for where some of these people serve. And so not just because it's a new year, but because it's the time of year when a lot of missionaries do find discouragement after the holidays. What I was thinking as I wrote that thing was, hey, I want to prod the churches that we serve to really, you know, see the value of a call, a regular ongoing call or Skype, you know, with their missionaries, and then how to turn that call into something that is going to actually encourage them.
So before you jump into that contact, tell me why this is a tough time for missionaries. Why are they depressed this time of year I'm guessing because they were with family and on vacation and stuff, but am I accurate?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And I think part of it is just geographically weather related, where you're, especially if they're people from the South or, you know, Southern California, and now they're in that dead of winter. Again, if they're above the equator. And so, you know, you're thinking about the holidays, it's a new year out in front of you. A lot of times people, either their home church will prod them to think about what they're going to do in the new year. You know, what are your goals? What are you trying to achieve? And so you're staring at a new year in front of you, and you're coming off of the holidays, maybe missing the family that you weren't able to go back home and see. And then you've got this new year in front of you, the weather, it just seems to be that, and they're not getting a lot of teams. Most people aren't going around to visit missionaries the first couple months of a new year.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think all those things kind of come together to can provoke them into a state of discouragement, you know, easier than normal.
I wonder if goal setting is a good thing, you know, this time of year, if it's a bad thing, or if they're like, Is this my last year out here? I don't know if I could keep doing this.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's kind of controversial. And I remember, you know, when I was on the field, and so much of the people that are asking you to do that are your financial supporting church.
Right, right.
Not individuals. And so I remember having to fill out these, you know, evaluations of the past year and then projections for the new year. And I don't know. I think it's kind of, I mean, goals are important. You know, obviously, if you don't have a target, you're not going to hit it. But I just think that, you know, in the realm of missions, in the realm of cross-cultural ministry, where the things that you measure for success are just so different, it's really hard to set accurate goals or to set any goals and then not be discouraged, because it's just, you know, success isn't measured the same way. You know, time spent, you know, I'm going to spend 100 hours this year, you know, with people at coffee shops. Well, what kind of goal is that? But that's the kind of stuff that is reality, you know, in the mission field. So,
yeah, that's a tough one. That relationship evangelism is a big deal. You know, it's all about building relationships and what are the strategies behind that. And yeah, it could be daunting.
Yes.
And then also knowing that people that don't know what you're going through are, you know, evaluating, you know, how they're going to spend their missions dollars.
Right.
How they can, you know, quote unquote, get the best bang for their buck.
Right.
Yeah, I can see that being.
And the grid that they're measuring success through, your supporters, that the grid that they're measuring success through is so radically different than the one you're having to use because of the culture on the field. And so whereas you may know now that you've learned the language, you've learned the culture, you're understanding that a good week was, hey, I spent 35 hours either in coffee shops or people's homes talking with their family, praying with them or whatever. But how do you report that? How do you say that to people back home who are, you know, they're scraping maybe to send you the money and like, well, hey, I don't get to spend 35 hours, you know, doing the kind of thing, just kind of hanging out with people like you do. So yeah, those are all contributors to the missionary stress experience, you know, as it's part of even that culture stress category that we've talked about before.
So let's get into these questions with that backdrop.
Right. Okay. Well, you know, basically one of the things, and I learned this from a Barnabas International conference a few years ago, and maybe we can put something up on a blog about Barnabas. Barnabas is a great ministry that teaches people, I mean, actually does care for missionaries, but also teaches people how to care for missionaries. And one of the things I learned at one of the Barnabas conferences I went to a few years ago was from this guy that was just really a ride-on teacher. He understood missionaries and so forth. And, you know, his main concept was, listen, missionaries that are discouraged, or all missionaries, but especially those that are discouraged, the most important thing you can do is get them to lift up their eyes to God and to redefine their life and ministry by who God is, not by the situation or circumstances they find themselves in right now. So a lot of times what we tend to do is, hey, what's going on? You know, what are you feeling? And our desire to encourage them, what we do is we get their focus on themselves,
right,
their situation, their circumstances. And so the proper use of questions, you know, will, if done well, can lift their gaze so that they'll be looking to the Lord. And then when they see him, then when they look actually at their circumstances and situation, it takes on a whole different perspective. And that's kind of the undergirding goal of encouraging a missionary, is getting them to lift up their eyes to see God and to ponder him and then see their situation through that perspective.
One of the things that we talked about a few weeks ago was the importance of prayer as you evaluate your calling. And the mission field is just not the place to start that habit of prayers before you go.
For sure.
Where prayer needs to become vital, because it's like oxygen.
It really is. And that's, you know, again, there we go. That's another podcast subject, is prayer. And of course, that could be for any Christian, but specifically, you know, doing one on the context of prayer in regards to, you know, God's name among the nations and those that have that desire to accomplish that. So anyway, yeah. So what I like to do when, and I'm sort of just, you know, going off the cuff here with what I'm talking about, the stuff that I put into that letter, But the first thing you want to do is what I found helpful is to tell the missionaries that, hey, I'm really thankful for you living out the truth of what Jesus said in Mark 10, 28 to 30. You know, in other words, you know, hey, that's where Jesus says, no one who's left father or mother, or sister, or brother, or lands for my sake and the gospel's who will not receive. You know, so Jesus is basically telling his disciples, look, those that hear my call for because their love for me and because of the love for gospel, that are willing to sacrifice, to say goodbye, to disconnect themselves from everything familiar and comfortable. I like to just encourage missionaries that I'm so thankful that when God called them to do that, they actually responded. The very fact that they're on the field means that they're part of that group Jesus is talking about in Mark 10.
If they actually are going through the season that you kind of gave us the backdrop for here, man, that encouragement's going to go so far.
And that's your goal. And again, you know, you need to know missionaries. I mean, everybody, but especially missionaries need to know that there's some acknowledgement by others, brothers and sisters, of their calling and what that calling costs them. And again, we don't want to put missionaries on a pedestal, but that calling requires a level of self-denial and self-sacrifice and disconnection that God doesn't call most people to. Now, he does call us to do those things, you know, as we're all believers, we're all new member, you know, 2 Corinthians 5, if any man is in Christ, he's a new creation, the old all things become new, the old things pass away. I mean, that's more like in the realm of, yeah, your perspective on everything changes. You have a new perspective on your money, on your wife, on relationships, on life itself. Being in Christ produces that. But for the missionary, it's not just a changed perspective. It's an actual physical detachment from everything that makes you who you are, that makes you feel okay with yourself, that brings comfort. So those that have chosen that, I like to start off by encouraging them by saying how thankful I am for them willing to live out the truth that Jesus said in Mark 10, 28 to 30.
Yeah, I can remember being out on the mission field and sometimes getting into a funk just realizing how far away I was from home.
Yeah.
I mean, I was far away from civilization, but the fact that just how far away from home, and I think my kids, man, were incredibly overwhelmed, especially my daughter, just by how far away she was from friends and people that got being a teenager and things like that. And it's like, yeah, I think this is right on just exactly what missionaries in the field need to hear. And for us, you're talking about it being cold. For us in this time of year was hot.
Yeah.
And, exactly. And it's kind of like, man, the cold weather's so far away from here, and it's going to be a long time before temperatures ever dip below 80 and the humidity dips below 95%.
When that's the same with us, you know, being in the Philippines, it was like literally I sweated for 5.5 years. I did not stop for 5.5 years. And, you know, at that time, I think the coldest recorded temperature ever in Cebu was like 68 degrees.
Oh, my gosh.
And so you're talking 90 to 95 every day with 98% humidity. And I'm coming from Southern California, you know, which, yeah, I mean, it can get hot here, but we don't have that kind of humidity like you guys had in Florida or most of the rest of the world.
Yeah. So anyway. Yeah. San Diego is like the perfect weather in the really universe. Is. I think it's like... like you're not even going to know that you've transitioned into heaven, you know, when you leave.
Exactly.
It's not that there probably won't be traffic.
Yeah. So then the other thing I like to do is after that is I like to tell them, hey, not only am I thankful for your willingness to do what Jesus described there, but also that, you know, you're in good company. So I kind of reference Hebrews 11, 13 to 16, where, you know, in the middle of that section where he's talking about the heroes of the faith,
right,
that they all lived on this earth as if they were pilgrims, and they didn't look back. And so, I like to encourage them, hey, kind of like what we talked about in the last podcast, that idea that you're part of a train,
right?
You're part of a legacy,
right?
You're in good company. Yeah. So I'd like to encourage them with that too.
That's, you know, to me, that's important to know that so, I'm not, yeah, it's that you're just not winging it, that you're not just on your own, that you are part of something bigger.
Yeah. And others have gone before. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing really new under the sun. So what you're experiencing, even though that's not necessarily encouraging to have somebody tell you, well, you're not the only one that's gone through it, but mm-hmm. there is truth that they're not the only ones that have gone through it or that have paid the price that they paid. And many have paid a greater price, some of them with their own lives, you know, to be out there and to do that. But you're in that company, a great cloud of witnesses.
And I think the important thing about that is to know that you're not doing something weird or just right. something that's not done. No, this is done. This is has been done. This will be done. Right. You're doing it right.
Yeah.
And it's probably very normal to feel the way you feel, but mm-hmm. you're doing it right.
That's right. So anyway, so then what I do, then I sort of transition into asking them some of those questions. One of the things I like to start with is basically, you know, hey, I want you to think about prior to you getting to the field. You know, what were some unexpected or surprising things God did prior to you actually leaving for the field that helped you to know you were right in the middle of the path of obedience? I mean, in other words, I want you to think back, because every missionary, the fact that they're on the field is proof that God did some radical things prior to their departure to get them out there, make their obedience possible. So, you know, so getting them, hey, what were there any unexpected or surprising or just regular things that God did while you were on the pathway to the field in the chute before you left? What were some of those things that helped you to know you were right on the path? And every missionary's got stories about how that all came together. And so having them, forcing them to think about that, but in the context of what God did, I think is a very helpful place to start. And then what I like to do, and the other thing that I should say probably, and I put this at the end of the letter that I wrote, is what makes true missionary encouragement possible through a call or a Skype. It isn't just the questions. The questions are pivotal. They're crucial. But it's your attentiveness as a person who loves them to listen to their answers, to be an interactive listener. If they're going to spend 5 minutes or 10 minutes describing these things God did to get them to the field, you know, be an attentive listener. Uh-huh. Oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. You know, great. And then maybe there's something they say in the middle of there that you want to throw a follow-up question in, you know, well, that's amazing. Well, how did that actually happen? You know, that kind of stuff. So then it tells them, man, this person's actually listening.
And recapping what you're hearing.
Recapping what you're hearing. And yeah. And when you do that, again, because, you know, missionaries are on the field, they're in a cross-cultural stressful context. And a lot of times people from the States that are communicating with them, there's always this time issue because, and they know life in the States is busy, but having somebody that's actually asking them really thought-provoking questions. And when they think about them, their thought has been provoked. This guy actually listens, lets me unpack it, and then lobs me questions, letting me know that he's genuinely interested. That is crucial.
Yep.
That is an encouragement in and of itself. So then what I like to do is I like to transition into, you know, maybe, and again, the missionary may have just gotten out there, or if they're further downstream, they've been out there for a while. I like to go to the second question I like to ask is, hey, you know, when you got there at some point, the honeymoon was over and you were hit with the tsunami of culture shock.
Right.
When culture shock enveloped you, what were some aspects of God's character or his attributes that helped you to get through that? What aspects, what pieces of who you know about God or who he is, or his, not just his character, but what he's, you know, his attributes, which of those ones brought you comfort and assurance in the midst of your being swallowed up in culture shock?
How would you have answered that question?
I think when I was out there that first few months of culture shock, it was, to me, it was the reality that God, that I'm his child, and then he actually spoke to get me there. In other words, you know, to me, the fact that our God is a living God and he's personal and we're in Christ, because we're in Christ, we're in this personal relationship, and he speaks and we can hear him. And because of that, then if I've heard him and I've obeyed, then regardless of what's happening around me, I know I'm where I'm at because this is where he told me to go. because he's a communicating God. So that was really huge to me. And then just sort of secondly, it was the fact that I just, again, God's, I don't know what the right way to describe it is, but his faithfulness in the sense that, you know, we were there, we had the provision that we needed to live, to get our kids into the school. Yeah. And our material needs were being taken care of because he's faithful to supply us what we need to do what he's told us to do.
Good. How about you? You know, for me, the thing that my mind was always blown. Right. I was just like, I felt like pinching myself. I can't believe I'm here.
Right.
And where I was initially, and then I did a lot of traveling as a missions pastor, leading teams to different places. But where I was just was so much like the culture of the Bible. Mm-hmm. You know, being in Africa, especially in the bush, it was just like everything you did was just so related to the things that Jesus taught. And it's like a lot of those parables came alive for me because those were the parables Jesus used in the agrarian farming culture.
Yeah. Good shift.
But for me, I was just like, I can't believe I'm here doing this. I felt privileged, quite honestly. I just felt privileged. I felt like I was never so thankful to be white in Africa because that just opened so many, being a white American just opened so many doors for ministry for me. Whereas here, being a white American is just like, who cares?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it just opened doors for the gospel. And ministry was in some ways, especially conversationally around sharing faith, was so much easier for me over there. And I just felt like I was where I was made to be, honestly. So I don't know. It was an extended honeymoon period for me, I think. So that's how I would answer it, though, especially is like, I embraced the culture shock. I loved it. I loved being out there. And then my kids too, man. My kids were like, so, I mean, Aaron was just the most popular kid in the universe when we were in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Just because he's already just cool.
Yeah. He got that from his dad, of course.
No, he didn't get that from me. That kid's got... Anyway,
yeah.
But that's how I'd answer it. It's just like, I know that this is where God has me just because there were challenges with culture, no doubt. But for some reason, it was like, you know, it changed the curve, changed the grading curve when I was over there. It said, yeah, okay, things are going to go slower. I'm just going to move slower. I don't have the same kind of expectations. And I just got in a groove with that. Mm-hmm. And I was just, I was daily thankful. I'm like, Lord, I can't believe you picked me to do this. Right. So I hope that doesn't sound hyper spiritual, but that's literally how I felt.
No, it doesn't. I mean, and again, everybody's experience is different. But the key thing is, you know, is that, you know, getting them to think about getting their eyes up on God. Uh-huh. So like the, you know, like you were saying, he's wired you to like, you know, to like things that are different, cultures that are different. Uh-huh. So you loved it, but that wiring in you for that is from him.
Yes.
So anyway, that's kind of the goal. And then the next thing that I like to do is ask them, you know, and not all these, sometimes, you know, what I found is these questions, you know, each of these questions can be a half an hour, an hour conversation.
Yeah, I bet.
So one of the things that I tell people when I'm training them to try to encourage missionaries on a call or Skype is, you know, don't feel like you have to squeeze in all these questions into one conversation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, maybe just ask one or two in each actual call. And you know, for anybody that's listening, especially from church leadership, that being regular with a call is crucial.
Yeah.
Like a once a month call, a once at most every 5 or 6 weeks, a call or a Skype. Yeah, man, I can't tell you how significant that is for the missionary to have somebody from their home church regularly call up. Do that. And what was, you know, again, my experience was when I was on the field, of course, this is pre-internet, pre-everything, where phone calls were $2 a minute.
Yeah.
You know, my pastor literally called me once a month, and it was a 30 to 45 minute call at $2 a minute.
Wow.
But I knew that he loved me and he cared about, you know, what was going on in our lives. And so, you know, you don't think of that, you know, you think, well, that's a $90 phone call, but it's a $90 phone call that, that made a huge difference in my, and my wife and my kids' ability to stay there and be, you know, emotionally and spiritually healthy.
Yeah. You know, and I experienced the same thing when I was over there. In fact, well, and we had to use sat phone where I was.
Mm-hmm.
But we even like planned our furloughs and like what we were going to do as families and, you know, ministry staff or the staff I was a part of, you know, for a trip. And it was really, it really gave us something to look forward to. But I want to also talk about the flip side of neglecting these calls. What happens if there's a neglect and not a planned part of this call when the missionary knows that, like if you set an appointment or something, then now they're worried, you know, why are they going to call?
Yeah.
I never hear from them. Why are they calling now?
Yeah. And that's, you know, that is true. If there hasn't already been that pattern, that could be somebody's take.
Yeah.
But I think for the person, you know, the church leader that's listening now that hasn't done that yet, but wants to start, I think you just start real honest.
Yeah.
You know, you just tell them, hey, you know what? I'm really convicted that I haven't been, you know, keeping up to date with you and hearing what's going on and hearing your story. And I want to start doing that. So I'm not looking for anything other than I want to talk with you. I want to hear what's going on in your life. I want to hear what's going on in the ministry. And hopefully I can be a source of encouragement to you. And I think missionaries, when they hear that, they'll buy into that. They won't think, wow, he's just checking me out because he's going to drop the hammer or I've done something wrong.
Yeah.
Clarity and transparency and authenticity, man, goes a long way.
Yeah. And I think that patience too, because, you know, those missionaries don't have anybody to talk to a lot about their problems. And sometimes it's just like the floodgates open and they just dump.
Yeah.
I mean, I've met with some pastors before. It's like, I call these missionaries and they just complain. And I'm just like, man, you got to love them, you know?
Yeah. And I think, again, if, and I hate, you know, you don't want to circle everything back to preparation or training, but again, if the goal of a church leader, and, you know, not just the church leader, but anybody who knows and loves missionaries, but particularly for this podcast, church leaders, you know, if your goal is truly to encourage them, then it's helpful to learn how our missionaries encourage. What can I do to equip myself to encourage them? And then there are resources available, like, you know, for example, this podcast, or there's a lot of resources available. But the goal, if the goal is encouragement, if the goal is, hey, I just want them to report in and see if we're getting our money's worth.
Right.
That kind of person is probably not listening to this podcast anyway, and probably not going to get the straight answer or much honesty from the missionary.
Yeah, that's more of a manager-employee relationship.
Exactly. And that's not what we're looking for.
Right.
Yeah, that's not at all what we're looking for. So let me do one more, and I think sort of keying into what we were just talking about earlier, not asking all the questions in one call, because my time is short. Another question is, you know, if somebody asked you, I like to ask them this, if somebody came up to you right now and asked you to describe what your God is like, what would you emphasize or tell them about him that you probably wouldn't have prior to being on the mission field?
Well,
now that takes some thought. Let me restate that, okay? Or reemphasize it. If somebody right now came up to you and said, hey, what is your God like? Describe him to me. How would you describe him, or what would you emphasize or tell them about God that you probably wouldn't have prior to going to the mission field? And so that, I mean, that's a deep thought question.
Yep.
That takes some probing around, and it forces them in a sense into the frame of, well, how would I just describe God generally? And then again, what have I seen about him? Those things that maybe brought me comfort in the past that have been amplified since I've been on the field, or what things were there that I knew about him before, but I didn't pay much attention to him, but now I do, because I've been out here. You know, whether it's his, you know, his omniscience, like for me, it was his sovereignty. It was really, you know, fresh to me. I mean, I always believed in the sovereignty of God, but the things that happen on the field, you know, you gotta process them. And a lot of times the idea that God is regardless of what's happened, he's in control.
Yeah.
He's permitted this to happen. The stress I'm feeling right now, he's permitted it. And then that sovereignty, for me, seeing his sovereignty, you know, afresh, what that then produces is that ability to then to get an easier on-ramp into, well, he is the God of comfort. He is the God who sees, you know, that kind of thing.
We have a number of other questions to go through. I think that you unpack these well, and even, you know, the way that you shared them, there's probably two or three sub questions that anyone listening to this that deals with missionaries can be like, oh, and I could ask this to Joe and Susie, and I can ask it this way, and here's where this applies to this situation. And I remember the last time we visited, we saw this, and this is what God was doing. And so just having a real kind of a record of what they're doing, what your conversations have been in the past, and bringing those forward into this new conversation.
Yes.
Super helpful stuff.
Yeah, it is. And that's the, again, missionaries need to know that they still matter.
Yeah.
That they still have a place of significance in the lives of the folks back home, especially among their church leaders. And boy, when you do that, like my pastor would, because he was so good at it, you know, he would, you know, like I said, he called literally once a month. So he was great at, like, when I talked to him this month, he's going like, well, now last month we talked about this, you know, whatever happened to that guy?
Yeah.
What, you know, what was the outcome of this? Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, man. And, you know, obviously you find out later, he does have a great memory, but he was taking notes,
yep.
You know? And so that's what I do. All of my Skypes that I do with missionaries around the world and whatever, you know, if I'm sitting in front of my computer, my hands are free, I'm taking notes.
Yep.
So that the next time I talk to them, they know that they've been a part of my mind, and I can have some continuity between conversations. Mm.
Solid stuff.
So let's continue this next time.
Let's do it.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. To learn more about becoming a missionary with Shepherd Staff, go to ssmfi.org/join. Connect with us on Facebook or Twitter by searching @ShepStaff on either platform.